Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Full Chat, the weekly F1 news and discussion show that promises to reveal this week's podcast. But once we go live, you'll realise it's just last week's podcast with one sponsor in a different position. And we're just pretending it's a new one because we think you're all idiots. I'm Brad Philpott, and as always, I've done my best to scrape the motorsport barrel for some winter F1 content. And we want you to add your views and join in the discussion in our live YouTube chat. We run a Twitter space during our recording, but we totally neglect the listeners on that platform. So if you're one of them, search Full Chat F1 on YouTube and get involved in the chatting. Remember, any Super Chat questions get a guaranteed answer, but even if you're a cheapskate and don't pay us any money, we'll probably answer you anyway. Tonight, we discuss the teams who've launched their cars so far, with Alfa Romeo Sauber showing us the first glimpse of an actual rendered 2023 car today. Plus, the big news that Ford is back in F1, well, in 3 years, and it's just going to really be a sticker on a Red Bull powertrains engine, but anyway. In History with Alex and Brad, we talk about the time when some F1 cars had two whole extra wheels. Yes, really. And as usual, we answer your questions in real time as you send them in. Joining me, as always, a former semi-decent kart racer who's as innovative and interesting as the Red Bull livery, my co-host and best mate, Alex Vangene. How's it going, Alex?
You're an idiot.
You can say dick, that's fine.
I think the whole thing about demonetization, I don't know if you bothered about that these days, but yes, I know how much fun you have creating these intros and especially finding ways, different ways to insult me, and it's always appreciated.
Well, also joining us tonight is a much more special guest who hosts a much bigger podcast than ours, along with his co-host Tandy. He's responsible for the Mercurial Quickstop F1. He taught us that it's all right to use naughty words when podcasting, plus a couple we still can't say on this podcast. He's a master of creating amazing, engaging, bite-sized F1 videos. He has Team LH tattooed across his chest. He's basically the Black Spanners of the F1 media world. It's Nyasha. Welcome to Full Chat.
Oh my God. That is hilarious. That is the best intro anyone's ever done for me, like ever. I cannot believe it. That was, I need to clip that up and just play it as my alarm every morning. That was incredible. Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it. Lovely to be here. Proud of you.
Thanks for getting here eventually.
Look,
you just about made it.
Yeah. I thought we were all bros here, but no, yeah, no, that's fine. Just chuck me under the bus. I was late. I'm sorry. But hopefully I can make up for it with a concerted effort to be a decent guest.
Well, thanks very much for joining us. And before we get going, a quick reminder, if you're joining us on the Twitter space, you won't hear the music or the bumpers. So if you want to get involved in the chat, see what we look like and have no weird gaps where there's no sound between the topics, head to YouTube. The link's on my Twitter profile or just search for Full Chat F1. So what have you been up to this week, Alex?
This week has been mostly work. Again, boring. You've roped me into playing Age of Empires, which is incredibly confusing. I've been sucking at iRacing and trying to keep the kids. Oh, and my little girl had to go into hospital last week. Nothing serious, but just some grommets in her ear. So we've had lots of stuff going on, all crazy, and nothing Formula One related. So I'm very much looking forward to talking about this tonight because there's loads going on. Finally, we actually have some news to talk about before everything properly gets going once the testing kicks off.
Yes, we do. And we've also got a guest to tell us loads of other stuff, which means we don't have to talk all the time. So, Nasha, I've got in my notes here to start off by asking you to tell us what Quickstop F1 is and how it got started, what your plans are for it. Just give us an update. What's going on with Quickstop? And for the people in our audience who don't know what it is, what is it?
I am so clumsy. I was like jabbing at the mute button on my phone and it wasn't working. And I got it working. So, God, you know what? This is like really cool for me. And like, this is a genuine, genuine story. So 2019, I was on the way to somewhere with work and I listened to like a lot of podcasts, but then I've kind of finished all my podcasts. And I was like, oh, do they do like F1 podcasts? And I literally searched in Apple F1 podcasts. And I listened to one podcast. I won't say who they were. I've not listened to them again. And then the next one I listened to was Missed Apex podcast. And I just remember, you know, it was probably the first time that I felt like a sense of community in F1, and I was like, oh my God, finally there's people who are saying the things that I was thinking when I watched the race. And it was all just like really like, it was so slick, and you all like, I like that you all have your own personalities, and you know, you've got such great panel of guests. So I was listening to it, and then back end of 2020 I was like, I want to make my own Missed Apex. And when I started Quickstop F1 in 2021, it's hilarious that you call me the Black Spanners. I literally wanted to be Spanners. Like, I was like, okay, we've got to make
you
it.
You poor bastard. You don't know him well enough.
But it's just, he holds it together so well. And I was like, I would love to host my own podcast. And so I asked Andy, who was like, whenever I used to tweet, so before I made F1 content, I used to make food content. And I used to tweet on my account about F1 and everyone would ignore me. And then the only person that would respond was Tandy. So I messaged Tandy. I was like, do you want to do an F1 podcast? And she was like, yeah, sure, could be cool. And to be honest, neither of us saw it becoming, look, we're not big, you know, obviously look at Missed Apex and some of the bigger podcasts. We're, you know, we're nowhere near there. But, you know,
I mean, look at Full Chat F1. I mean, look at, we've got literally hundreds of people that listen sometimes.
But you know what? But that's when I'm so clumsy. When we started, I remember like the first episode getting 100 downloads. And I remember being like, what? I was not expecting 100 people to listen to this. And to be fair, it was kind of stagnant. And then we did like the British Grand Prix. I remember the British Grand Prix episode was when me and Tandy were both really drunk, and obviously the Verstappen Hamilton incident. And I think a combination of us being really drunk and just being really out there, and that incident, a lot of people followed us after that. And it's just kind of grown and grown and grown, I guess, to where we are now, which is, you know, I guess like a really unique platform in the space, which we're really proud of.
Sorry, Brad.
No, go for it, Alex.
So you've only actually been going since the beginning of 2021? Because with the base of people you've got on, and when I do listen, you seem like you've been going for ages. I thought we'd been going much longer than that. That's really interesting though, because you have a really diverse group of guests on. Some proper big F1 fans. You've had Oscar winners on your show. Which is, yeah, it's always...
We'll get him too, don't worry. I'll get him.
he did your quiz, didn't he, Brad? He did a question for your quiz.
He was the best one on my Christmas quiz, and go check that out on my YouTube channel if you're feeling Christmassy in February. The quiz is about Formula One. There is Christmas music in the background, but yeah, Trayvon was the first person, I think, on there, one of the first people, and did the most creative, as you'd expect from an Oscar-winning director. He really went to town on his question. But I remember that my first contact with you, Nasha, was I was in Finland, I believe, doing a winter tyre test, and I was doing a Twitter space when they were quite new, and you dropped in. And you had quite a distinctive voice. I'd not really much of an idea who you were. I think I'd probably seen you replying to things on different tweets. And I obviously, from that point, then listened to the show and then knew exactly who you were. And I'm now a full long-term listener. I'm like, I listen to all of them. And I've listened to plenty of your podcasts whilst on a test track. Whilst sideways around a corner. And I'm just, chuckling away listening to what you guys have to say. So... I'm a big fan.
No, like it's super cool, man. Like this is really cool for me because if it weren't for Missed Apex, I wouldn't have started a podcast because I think I would have probably gone through a load of podcasts and not enjoyed them.
Same goes for us, really.
So it's one of those things where I think. It's really dope. Alex, we started March 21, so we're not even at our 2-year anniversary yet. And you're right, we have been able to get a wide selection of guests. I think, elephant in the room, I guess there's not many people, or definitely wasn't when we started podcasting, like Black people who are podcasting. And also, I think it was a perfect storm, like that season. You couldn't have picked
what a
better
season to start.
Yeah, you couldn't have picked a better season to start. And I think for a lot of Team LH, it was nice to just have it was a very divisive season. I think it was nice to just have a very much, this is like someone who thinks the same, or these are people who think the same way as we do, who feel the same way as we do, who can understand how we feel and are unashamed about it. And we're really not serious at all. So I think, especially in a season like that, I think people were really happy to have like a bit of like comedy relief, I guess, from what was quite a serious season. So it was a perfect storm.
It was definitely one of those seasons where if you don't have many friends who like F1 and you come across Twitter and let's say most of it is the other side to what you support, it can feel like a really lonely place. You sometimes feel like you're actually shouting at clouds and talking to flat earthers who just can't see the things that you're seeing. You sometimes come across as fanatical in that sense of, why don't you just believe me and understand the things that I'm saying? But then they've got their own opinions on things as well. And because the world is the world, you've got to let other people have their opinions.
So you guys gave me a sanctuary in the aftermath of my Max Verstappen interaction. So in the moments where I was getting close to death threats, I don't know whether I actually got any, but certainly like lots
of
abuse.
Death threats, that wasn't funny. The stuff that happened was funny.
I got quite a lot of abuse, and you guys welcomed me on to basically tell my story about the real side of that. And yeah, it was nice to be among like a friendly group of people who shared similar views. So we'll do a bit more plugging for Quick Stop later on. You can tell us what's coming up in the pipeline, but we should probably start talking about our first topics. So I'm not going to forget the bumpers this week. Sorry, Twitter people, you won't hear them, but here we go. So over the last week, we've had Haas, Red Bull and Williams launch cars, but not really launch cars. So we effectively had, the livery reveal for Haas was exactly what they said it was. We then had the Red Bull launch where they pretended that it was the real Red Bull, but it definitely wasn't. It was just last year's car. And Williams, who again didn't claim that they were launching a real car. It was just last year's car painted in this year's livery. So we've had two livery launches plus a car that they pretended was the RB19 but wasn't. And then today we had a bit more of a proper one. Today we had Alfa Romeo in real life launching a show car, but in pretend renders launching pictures of their real car, which is extremely confusing. So we've had four. What have you guys thought of launch season so far?
I thought the Alpha was beautiful. That red there. I mean, I'm a sucker for a red car. My last two cars have been red, and I always love a red car. My phone's red. It's my favourite colour. So when someone has something that's a really deep, dark, glossy red like that is, absolutely beautiful. The Haas, I was a bit meh about. The Red Bull, I was equally meh because, I mean, I liked their old sort of the purple shiny livery they used to have back in the Seb days. But this latest one, I'm not a fan of matte paint, especially the whole thing completely being matte. So it just completely makes me go a bit meh. I like the Williams livery. I think the Williams livery looked really good. The really clever placement of the Duracell sponsorship on the roll hoop was absolute genius marketing as far as I'm concerned, because it
which we've seen that before, obviously last year.
Was it there last year?
Yeah, I think from Miami, or certainly at Miami. Oh, okay. I noticed it last year.
I think by the time the season started, I've stopped paying attention to the liveries, unless it's a special livery like the McLaren one or whatever. But I mean, the only thing I'm guessing the only reason Red Bull did a big launch going to New York was to talk about Ford. Otherwise, it seems like a waste of money for literally rolling out the old car, probably with exactly the same livery with a different sponsor.
So, yeah, I think the only thing that I noticed that had changed was one of the sponsors did it by bit to move to the rear wing. But really, as our intro alluded to, it was a bit of a disingenuous launch where they wanted to get lots of eyeballs on it. And they claimed that they did not at any point say, this is a livery launch, this is a show car, like a couple of the other teams have done. They were not upfront about it at all. They were basically saying, this is our new car. And they even had people in the crowd, you know, flagged with RB19 and stuff. You know, it was they weren't being genuine in any way. And that kind of follows on from, I'm not just bashing Red Bull.
Not yeah. being genuine. Oh my days, I'm so shocked.
I mean, there is obviously a bit of a pattern there, but last year they did a similar thing where, and it was worse last year. They launched their complete show car. It wasn't even their car. It was the F1 yeah. Authentics car, whatever that was, whatever the right name for that.
It was the show car that F1 wheeled out as a case of, this is what next year's cars it was the generic, going to look like.
Yeah, exactly. The generic 2022 F1 car. Painted in their colours, and they were claiming it was the real car. I don't think we're a fan of this. I don't think most people are a fan of this. We don't care if you say it's a livery launch and that's what we're expecting. That's fine. Yeah. It's better if you still just show it quickly so we don't have to sit there and wait for 40 minutes for the livery. But I think the other teams who have launched so far have done it pretty well.
I still believe that Williams and Alpha today as well, they talked more to people. They talked to drivers. They talked to reserve drivers. I don't care. I'll hear enough from the drivers once testing starts. That's when I want to hear them. I don't want to hear about their aspirations for the season, because their aspirations are all the same. They want to perform well. If they're in cars that are at the front, they want to win races and win championships. If they're in a car that's in the midfield, they want some points. And they just want to beat all the other teams in the midfield, and they complain that everyone else is too far ahead. I don't need to hear that. Show me the car. Show me some detailed shots of the car. Then go away. We don't need an hours-long production for a livery launch. And I wasn't expecting anything more than a livery launch from anybody this season. I was literally just expecting the cars aren't going to look much different, because the regs haven't changed that much. It's a bit of a... They've raised the floor 30 mil, I think.
Don't get into technical changes on this show. That's not what we're about. We're about interacting with the chat. And Lalo Triolo says, Red Bull dodging showing the RB19 like it was an F1 budget sheet. Classic. And that's why we love you, chat. Did you watch any of the launches live, Nasha? I did. I watched the Alfa Romeo one today. That's it.
Yeah, I watched Alfa Romeo today. It's the first one I watched. I actually missed the Red Bull one. Not out of choice, just like work. Like, it's during work hours most of the time. So
they are silly times, aren't they?
Yeah, they're on a ridiculous time. So I think, like, what struck me with today's launch is that I'm very sure everyone in that audience was like a paid actor. Like, I just don't believe that if they took like a cross section of their fans, it would just be like 100 architects. Like, I just don't understand.
It was like Jeremy Kyle. I think Aldas said this and Tuomo F1. I said it live whilst I was watching it to my partner in bed next to me. Like, this looks like a daytime TV show. But, you know, that's very Sauber. That's kind of, it seemed to fit with their image. So
yeah, and like, for me, you know, going back to, you know, like liveries, I'm not a massive livery guy, full stop. Unless we're talking about the Mercedes being black, I don't care. So I but what I would say is that, yeah, with the Alpha one, it just seemed like a bit of a mess. Like, they had it behind the host.
I did hear that. Yeah, it was like shown just before, it was revealed just a few moments before it was properly revealed.
Showing that it was obviously filmed. And what's his face? Tom Clarkson. Tom Clarkson said, "Oh, you've got here from the factory really quickly." I'm like, "Well done, Tom. Way to keep the illusion, mate."
Yeah, honestly, they really, I don't know, it just seemed a bit of a mess. But it's nice, you know. I feel like it's nice for us to have, I do like watching the launches when I can, just to get back into the rhythm of seeing new stuff, live stuff. You know, the fact that, look, if we're not even going to have two testing sessions anymore, and one is a shakedown and one is a test. So if they're willing to literally hide the cars from us for 3 days, it's no surprise that they're going to hide the cars from us at their launch, in all honesty.
And I thought at least today it was nice that we've had a glimpse of what the 2023 cars will look like from the renders, because we're quite confident that the renders we saw were of at least a version of this year's car for Alfa Romeo / Sauber / Audi. But really what we've learned is, so far, they're going to look exactly the same. There wasn't really, apart from the spiky floor, and again, we're not a tech podcast, we're not going to go into tech details, but visually, that's all I could really see that jumped out at me, was the serrated, what someone on Twitter said, the anti-Verstappen floor.
The interesting design choice, though, was Valtteri Bottas. I mean, he's going full 80s mullet. Yeah. American Southwest policeman. I mean, seriously, the guy used to be semi-stylish, especially with all his coffee that he drinks.
Wait, you don't like it? You don't like Valtteri Bottas?
I don't like the really big mustache with a mullet.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not cutting edge fashion, I have received a text message from somebody who has just said it gives Jeffrey Dahmer vibes. Or as Maverick Sim Racing, has said in the chat, Miami Vice vibes.
Like, that's fine. The Damos. I mean, like, for me, I find it really, I find it really cool that he is, you know, when he was at Mercedes, he was so wound up. Like, he was so wound up. He was so tense. And it wasn't until it got announced he was leaving that we started to see these elements of personality. He was on the TikTok, he was cracking jokes. Today, I loved, like, he kind of did like a little stand-up routine, you know, if the car is good, I designed it. If the car is bad, they designed it. I was like, go on, Valtteri. Like, he seems really happy and settled, and I think that's good. Happy for him on a personal level, even if the head's a bit mad.
Do you know what that reminds me of? Lewis leaving McLaren. Because Ron Dennis put Lewis in such a box of a case of, well, put his drivers in box going, this is what a Formula One driver who drives for McLaren is. And the second he left, the second Alonso left, the second anyone left that team, they sort of sprouted out and did their own things, you know, and Lewis has transformed as a person since leaving McLaren. I genuinely believe it's because of the box that he was forced to go in that he just didn't want to go in.
So we know the reason that Bottas has kind of changed his style like this is because of his girlfriend, whose name escapes me, but she's a high-performance cyclist.
Cromwell.
That's right, Tiffany Cromwell, who's an Australian cyclist, competitive cyclist. And I think he's lent into that kind of Aussie vibe. You mentioned his style. Popcorn Anytime in the chat says, unfortunately, I live where that look has never gone out of style. I think it's quite cool. Like, he's obviously enjoying himself. There's lots of images over the winter of him having a beer and just kind of literally letting his hair down, and yeah, all Power to him. And I also noticed a quote this week. I don't know how old the quote was, but it was him saying that he had to come to accept at Mercedes eventually. It took till the final year at Mercedes for him to accept that Lewis was just a better driver than him. And I think he's one of the few people who would ever admit that anyone was better than them. You know, one of the few F1 drivers.
I think that's the start, the end of your career. You start admitting people are better than you.
I'd say yes, except that you're saying the best driver of all time statistically is better than you, which is not so much of an admission. I think most people...
You know, there was an article in motorsport.com that was saying, you know, could Lewis be the best driver of all time if he hasn't raced in the Fiat Punto Cup or, you know, the truck races they have in Hungary. So I'm just saying he might not be. So maybe Alex is right. Maybe he shouldn't admit to losing out to Lewis because Lewis hasn't even driven in, you know, the Porsche Cup, for example. So like, yeah.
I thought about including this as a segment. I did, but I think this deserves a whole kind of massive part of a program dedicated to it. And we just had a bit too much actual news. Essentially, the discussion was, Alex, that can you really call someone the greatest driver of all time if they haven't had a broad career doing lots of other championships? You know, Hamilton hasn't won the World Rally Championship, he's never done Dakar, etc. And although, you know, I understand the merit of someone having a real broad skill set in motorsport, and you can admire the people who have done that, that generally means they haven't specialized in the very top level of the sport, which is Formula One, and gone on to be the most successful driver ever in that. And I think you've probably got to put more weight on having a sustained, extremely successful career in the highest form of the sport than on dabbling in various other things a la, you know, Alonso. Sebastian Loeb has done various things. He raced in World Touring Cars, and then he obviously was WRC champion. There's loads of people you could point to. Even Vettel, you could say, has done lots of Race of Champions and been successful in that, various cars. And
not in the skills challenge though, Brad.
Not in the skills challenge. The only time that was ever run, he didn't win that.
And after you won it, it got dropped forever because they can't have some Billy coming in and beating the Formula One drivers and hurting their egos.
In fact, I agree with the motorsport.com thing now. Unless you can slide an aerial atom around effectively a car park, you're not the best F1 driver of all time. So
but
there we
thing
go.
Is, I've always said this a case of... Let me start that sentence again. The whole conversation of best in the world, I only ever attribute that to Formula One because Sebastian Loeb is probably the best rally driver of all time. And if Lewis Hamilton got in a rally car, Loeb would destroy him and vice versa. So I've never gone to that whole thing of, yes, Lewis Hamilton is the greatest statistically and, you know, sat on my side of the fence, he's the best driver of all time. Greatest F1 driver than ever been.
Do you really need to go outside of Formula One? You can just say he's the best Formula One driver of all time.
Yeah.
And because that's what he hasn't tried to be the best at other stuff. Like he's tried to be the best F1 driver and he's achieved that. I just think it's so telling to, and I don't know whether they did this deliberately, but certainly some people in the comments did, that they tried to kind of any opportunity to belittle that achievement to make it, well, maybe other people are better in a way that they wouldn't do with other drivers. So that's my opinion.
I mean, I'd love to know who's achieved, which driver has achieved the most in various different motorsports. I know it was John Surtees. He was F1 champion and motor. I don't know if it was MotoGP or whatever it was back then, but he was...
Whatever the equivalent was back in the day.
He was the motorbike world champion. Same year, I think. I know Danny's in the chat, so he'll probably tell us. Or if Kyle turns up, he'll know.
And in the past, drivers did traditionally do more different things. That's just how it was. But that isn't today's sport. And I don't think anyone would have seriously... No one could have gone on to achieve what Hamilton has achieved if they were doing loads of different motorsport. Because you can't. They're too different. You have to specialise to be really good at the thing you're in. I know Kubica went and did some rallying, and that obviously didn't end very well. He was competitive, though. He was very good. Whether he could have been the best at that, who knows? Raikkonen as well. Raikkonen went in his sabbatical from Formula One when Ferrari paid him to not drive for a year. Raikkonen went off and did World Rally Championship, but he wasn't the fastest. He was like fine. He wasn't the best. So that just goes to show that the other drivers who have tried to do those other things haven't been particularly amazing. I think probably the best one of recent times is Alonso going and doing Indy 500 and in the first year being very competitive and going and winning Le Mans, but in a dominant car. So I don't really see either of those things as equivalent to winning another Formula One World Championship. And Alonso, for example, still has a lot of those to go before he'd be in consideration for the Hamilton accolade.
Someone said in the comments athletes these days are so specialized compared to what it used to be. Now you can't really compare someone who runs 100 meters and 400 meters. And I think that's really true. Look, I saw some names being bandied about that were so respectfully old that it's just you. All the time, people are telling me you can't compare eras. You can't compare eras. You can't compare Lewis to Clark or Fangio or whatever. But then the minute there's like a new loophole found, a new cost cap clause that they could exploit, then all of a sudden, wow, you know, a guy who was driving cars with like not even half the horsepower before, and, you know, of course they were much more dangerous and whatever, but like the physical demands or whatever, like the professionalism required back in the day was not the same, and the dedication needed to be at the top and the level of drivers that they were up against, it was nowhere near the level today and the level required today. So whilst I can admire people's bravery in, you know, in racing in those times, you can't say on one hand you can't compare drivers from different eras and then give me a bunch of different drivers who didn't achieve as much in F1 but did random other stuff, and then say because they did random other stuff at a time when it was much easier to do random other stuff, they are now suddenly completely better than someone who has been at the pinnacle of the sport for a decade and a half. It doesn't make sense.
And the reason they stopped drivers doing lots of other things was because they'd be doing F1, go and do Formula 2, and drivers got killed or seriously hurt and then couldn't go back to do F1. So that's why they've basically got written in their contracts they can't do it these days. But it's interesting you mentioned a case of, you know, is Lewis Hamilton better than Jim Clark, for example? Well, me and Brad got embroiled in a Twitter battle this
week.
Let's
do it, Alex. Let's do it again.
We got embroiled in a Twitter battle on, I think it was on Dirty Side of the Pod, Dirty Side of the Track Pod at F1 Dirty Side on Twitter, where they're doing a tournament on who the best driver in the world is. And I waded in when it had Jim Clark versus Fernando Alonso, and Jim Clark's vote wiped the floor with Fernando Alonso. Now, I don't know if anybody knows this. I'm not a big fan of Fernando Alonso, but for anyone to tell me that a guy who drove in the 60s is better than Fernando Alonso, who is a prime athlete even at 763 that he is currently now, you can't tell me that Jim Clark, in that form that Jim Clark was in back in the 60s, would beat any driver in Formula One today.
Yeah, yes. but Alex, are you saying that if Jim Clark had had all of the exact same opportunities as Fernando Alonso and had done karting and sim racing and had all the training and physical fitness, are you saying he couldn't have been as good as Alonso?
Would that have been Jim Clark?
Exactly. And obviously the answer to that is, he didn't have those opportunities. We're not arguing about what if you gave a driver the exact same opportunities as someone else. If you gave me the same opportunities as Lance Stroll, I'd hope I'd be bloody better than Lance Stroll ended up being. Like, you know, the question is, the drivers that actually existed, Jim Clark, Jackie Stewart, whoever, in the form, you know, you can take them in their peak, take them in when they were at their best, that's fine. I'll kind of grant you that. But you know, we're not saying Jackie Stewart now versus Alonso, but you take those drivers at the form they achieved, were they as good as a modern F1 driver? And I think you've got to be absolutely balmy to suggest that they're remotely as good. If you take anyone from any sport which requires technical ability and physical fitness, and you have someone who is trained from a very young age, you know, in a go-kart from 5 years old or younger, some of these people, but 8 years old at an absolute minimum, and then doesn't get out of that cart for like 25 years and have all the simulator training in the off, you know, with Verstappen, I know this was actually shown to be untrue, but Verstappen sticking a simulator in even his private jet. I think
is it not true?
No, it's not true. It's somewhere else.
I was like, that's baller. If you do that, that's mega. I love that.
I think it was the motorhome it was mistranslated from. But anyway, you can't possibly say that the driver that's had all of that prep is not better or not massively more likely to be better than someone who did it in an era where they didn't drive as much, didn't take the training seriously, and were against effectively other people of the same ilk. You know, you say someone, look at Fangio, he won however many championships, 5 championships, but who was he competing against? Yes, it was more dangerous. Yes, if you put a driver from now back then, they'd probably go, no way am I driving that death trap. Mm-hmm. But in terms of skill, in terms of how fast they are, what their ability is, I just think you've got to be on another planet to say that. The same would be true of pretty much every sport as well, that a driver from the 50s or 60s or 70s is remotely as good as a driver from today.
I even think if you go as much to say the skill of a Jim Clark is the same as the skill of an Alonso, Alonso still wins because of the fitness. Because we don't have to go that far back. Look at Michael Schumacher. When Michael Schumacher came into the sport, he was the only person at that time who put proper effort into his fitness. And they talked often about him doing qualifying laps for a whole race and still being perfectly fit, while everybody else next to him on the grid was like dying in buckets of sweat. And part of the thing that elevated Schumacher so much higher than everybody else was because he could just do it harder and faster for longer. Mind the double entendre
okay.
There.
We're going there.
And so, you know, there's the classic footage of James Hunt winning a race. You know, James Hunt, fantastic racing driver, but he stood on the podium with a wreath around his neck while being interviewed, asked for a cigarette. And okay, it looks badass as a video package, but that's not an athlete.
So I think we can actually even go to like more recent examples than this. And this wasn't a show topic, but it's just a really interesting topic. And it is a
banger of a conversation.
Yeah, I always enjoy this particular one. But we touched upon this, I think, last week, but we didn't really go into detail. Damon Hill.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Didn't start racing in F1 until he was in his 30s and did no karting, wasn't interested in motorsport, understandably probably, until he was in his late teens. And even that was like motorbike racing. I don't think he was the world's best at that either. And it kind of like sauntered into it in his late 20s. Are we saying that Damon Hill, who, you know, was good enough to go and win an F1 world championship in the car, and probably two,
could have had two,
if you give him 94 as well, if Danny's favourite driver wasn't so unfair.
I just said to Danny in the chat, look at me bigging up Michael Schumacher.
And my point is, Damon Hill, I just can't see that he's anywhere near as good as Lance Stroll, which makes me, I feel dirty saying that, but I feel like if you stuck Lance Stroll, who's had so much opportunity, back in Damon Hill's shoes in those days, and again, just remove the danger element, you know, remove the worry of the danger element, and we're just assuming that he, you know, he's fine with that. I think Lance Stroll would be much quicker than Damon Hill back then. But anyway, there we go. But also,
not only, the thing I've also noticed, and what going back watching old races, there was often old races where even the top guys would spin off a lot and crash and go out a lot. You just don't see that.
Done it a couple of times. Even Schumacher did it like quite a few times. It'd just go off. It'd just do a Leclerc. Leclerc would fit in back in the day.
Oh, bless him. I still can't get that yell from France out of my head. Poor guy. It's a shame because this Ferrari driver is actually like these days, which doesn't work. But you don't see F1 drivers making in in the grand scheme of things, that many mistakes when it comes to actual in-race stuff. Okay, practice and qualifying is one thing, but I just think the overall performance of racing drivers, even in F2, and I mean, I don't know F2 that well, but I'd still say at least the top half of the grid are still an unbelievable quality of driver.
Well, I think we should probably start to move on to, well, at least what, we won't do all the topics, but we'll move on to one of our scheduled topics. But just before we do that, I just want to remind anyone in the Twitter space that you're getting a real raw deal being in the Twitter space. It's much better if you watch us on YouTube or wait till tomorrow and download the podcast and boost our podcast.
Download the podcast now.
If you don't know, we are also a real podcast nowadays. So just search for Full Chat F1 on your podcatcher of choice and we'll be there later tonight, actually, but definitely first thing tomorrow morning. So help make me and Alex happy by giving us larger viewer figures than the previous week. Every week so far, we've had a nice little increase. So we've got a way to go before we're at Quick Stop F1 level, but we'll keep trying. And hopefully the season will be exciting and that will help us out.
That's really good, though. I just want to say, like, that's really good. Like, I think you should be really proud of the fact that you're getting traction. The production value on here is mental.
That's all Brad.
I was looking at the, I was like, man, we need to get an intro. We need to get different screens. I need to do multi-cam editing. So, honestly,
it's a pain in the ass, though. I have to say, pressing all the buttons all the time, which, you know, the people on Twitter, again, are not getting the benefit of. And if you're listening on the podcast on your way to work tomorrow, you're also not getting the benefit of this. But I'm trying hard, at least, to make it look pretty for the people on YouTube.
The amount of times I have to tell him to stop fiddling around with the video side, because obviously the podcast, the Twitter don't see it. He was moaning about a transition coming in slightly less smooth than it normally does. I'm like, Brad, no one can see it. No one cares.
Well, look, like, in terms of, like, you know, when you're a creator, you have to want to be the best. And that was one of the things about Mist Apex, when I was like, the production value on this is unlike anything that I've seen. And I used to watch, like, a lot of football content as well. So I was like, the production value on it is actually really good. And that's what made me, like, want to, in my own way, I was like, okay, I'm going to make the best short form content out of our thing, and that's what's helped. So I feel like if you want to do anything, you've got to want to do it properly, and I feel like you guys are doing it properly, so you should be happy.
Thank you, Nasha, and thank you to the chat. Lalo in the chat saying, if Brad's computer works properly, the production value is mint. Yeah, we have had our share of technical difficulties, including last week when all of my buttons just vanished because of some technical fault, and I had to remake
them all. Brad loves it so much that he even created it again last week.
yeah, that happened. So I tell you what, we're going to move on to our next topic. So let's play the bumper. So if I've got this right, the next topic is about Ford. So we won't dwell on this too long because it's actually kind of old news now. But Ford are coming back to Formula One, but they're coming back in 3 years. So they're not back yet, which must have made the launch a bit awkward and weird, the New York Red Bull launch, where you've got a Honda-powered car. But really the big news is that Honda are being replaced. It's a bit of a strange situation. Oh, we've had our super chat, by the way. So, Newmaid, I've got a button for the super chat. Newmaid says, shout out to Full Chat, especially Brad's button. Well, my button pressing skills are completely going to pot. but anyway, thank you very much, Newmaid. And if you want to send in a super chat, you can do that. Hashtag is a podcast. Hashtag is a great podcast. Hashtag PC is working. Thank you very much, Newmaid. Yes, sorry, back to Ford. Awkward situation. Red Bull have still got Honda for another few years. Ford are just going to be lurking in the background, kind of, I don't know, it's weird. I can't think of a parallel, similar situation.
Especially because apparently, out the back of the studio, or in and around where Red Bull were doing that launch, there was a Porsche with a Red Bull livery on it.
Even weirder, because Red Bull obviously had this kind of flirtation with Porsche, and we thought that was going to happen, and then that didn't happen, and then we had Honda. I thought they were going to just fully embrace Honda for the near future, and now it's Ford. It's like I think Ford fits them well, and we can have the discussion as Connor Edwards.
Why do you feel like Ford fits them well?
Okay, right. Well, let me just tell you. Let's go on the Brad only screen, and I'll tell you all about why. So
your favorite screen.
I tweeted earlier this week that I think Ford is a really good fit for Red Bull. as the level of manufacturer. And I was being a bit tongue-in-cheek. I was basically saying Ford are a bit of a kind of cheapy, everyday, normal person brand. They're not really like a prestigious manufacturer like a Ferrari or a Mercedes or an Audi or whatever. And I had a lot of pushback on Twitter. I had basically probably Ford owners or Ford fans going, no, it is prestigious. And they then listed off all the Formula One success that Cosworth mainly have achieved, who are an engine tuner.
Cosworth, anyway, notoriously not Ford.
Yeah, but, you know, obviously they worked together and they were using Ford engines for those things. But yeah, a lot of pushback, people saying that Ford is prestigious. So, Nyasha, is Ford a prestigious brand? We're off topic already.
Is Ford a prestigious brand? I think it depends how you look at it, and I think it depends where you are.
Like, by the way, this doesn't matter. Like, the point of my tweet wasn't to say it was a bad decision, or they shouldn't have done it, or Ford are crap, or it wasn't that. I was just basically making a dig at Red Bull not having a fancy car manufacturer.
I think that, no, and look, you know me, anytime we can dig at Red Bull, let's go in! But I think that, personally, I don't think Ford is a prestigious car manufacturer. I think there's, if we're talking, especially the Cosworth thing, like Ford are not Ferrari, Ford are not Mercedes, you know. So,
but Ford beat Ferrari at Le Mans, and Ford had a really successful engine manufacturer in Formula One.
Doesn't mean the cars they make for the road make them a prestigious brand.
And that was really my point.
Yeah,
it's a silly point.
And someone who now has a Mercedes. My Mercedes is much more prestigious than my Fords ever were. And I've had lots of Fords, and I liked my Fords. They are not a prestigious car brand. Nobody looks at any Ford other than a Mustang, which
or a GT, or a GT40.
Or a GT40 and goes, oh, that's nice. No one gets excited really about buying a Ford unless you're a boy racer. Oh no, he's doing his zoom in camera.
It's the first time I've ever used the zoom in camera on the screen. And the Mustang my mic is still working. The Mustang doesn't even have a Ford badge on it. The Mustang is called a Mustang.
You don't what they have Ford. Done anyway. To the Mustang now, I know we're going into cars.
That's okay. We can talk about this. Is our podcast. We can do whatever we want.
They have turned the Mustang into an MPV, electric MPV. I'm sorry.
Yes.
You have enough names that you can pick from. I like the Mustang. You know, I it's a classic car that I adore. But for God's sake, don't stick that badge on an electric MPV, because that's not what that badge is supposed to be attached to.
To be fair to Ford, I believe there is also a new Mustang, which isn't just that electric one. I think they've got a fancy, in fact, I'm sure I saw a YouTube video recently on the next one after that horrible electric version. And I've got no problem with electric cars, just that is a really horrible looking one. And it's not a real Mustang. I think they've got a new one. So, yeah. Anyway, sorry, I've just descended into slagging off Ford as a brand, and that's only because of the silly Twitter spat this week. But as a partner for Red Bull, I genuinely think it's a good partner, not just because I'm taking the piss out of Red Bull. I actually think I think they'll work well together. It's exactly the partner Red Bull were looking for, because they've got a powertrains division. Red Bull have at their Milton Keynes factory. They've been developing since Honda announced they were pulling out again. They've built up and spent a lot of money on this Red Bull powertrains facility. All Red Bull want is someone to come in and put their name on a Red Bull engine and maybe give them some technical help. And that's exactly what Ford's going to give them. Go for it, Nasha.
Can I ask a question? So I've been quite confused about Red Bull's journey in this, you know, in terms of, are they going to have like technical partners in this? Are they wanting to do it on their own? And I guess it looks like ultimately they're doing it on their own. How successful do you think Red Bull powertrains will be, I guess, considering, is it going to be just a continuation of Honda and so because they've got that basis, it'll be successful? Or, you know, becoming a new engine manufacturer for a team that is not a car company, you know, and, you know, of course they've got a team of incredible engineers, you can't doubt that, but it's a very difficult thing. And I guess if they're successful, it would be unprecedented, I guess. So how successful do you think they'll be?
Yeah, so that's actually a very, very good point. I think the fact they've given themselves quite a long lead time with the Honda IP effectively in this generation of engines, and they took a load of Mercedes personnel from Brixworth, and they're going to have, it won't just be a They wouldn't have just built the factory and suddenly they've got to produce a new engine. I think they've got quite a lot of time and quite a lot of expertise with the time to build up to the new regulation set. Plus, the Ford involvement won't hurt. Ford are specialising nowadays in electric vehicles. I think, you know, that's like their big deal. Ford are predominantly going to be making electric vehicles, like a lot of manufacturers, but Ford have made a big thing of this. So that won't hurt having that on their side as well. I think they've had the time. They've probably got some very, very clever people on board with be able to use that time. And with it being a new regulation set, and with obviously development restrictions that mean other teams, because there's engine development restrictions, it's not just the chassis side of things, it'll stop other manufacturers who are more established and bigger from running away and doing infinite testing. So I would be surprised. Also, Red Bull don't care about cheating. So, you know, if they'll find any loopholes, then they'll obviously exploit those too. So I would be very surprised if they don't have a competitive engine as Red Bull powertrain / Ford when the new regulation set starts in 2026, isn't it?
Having Danny on last week, we did really well in the Netherlands last week. I don't think it's going to be the same as this week. We have listeners in the Netherlands now.
Bad time to bring me on. Jesus.
Exactly.
Christ.
That's what I mean. Back to back. Literally polar opposites. But we'll have Danny back on and we'll have you back on. And we'll have Kyle on. Well, we're going to have Kyle Power on next week. And he is incredibly neutral. Even though he does have a fandom, he is very good at being the diplomat. It'll be very interesting on how we manage to coax things out of him.
So, Alex, I did temporarily mute you on the podcast for like 4 seconds. I don't even know why I have a mute button for you. I don't need it, but I think just in case you have a coughing fit and you forget to mute yourself. But yeah, apologies to anyone.
You've learned well from spanners to be able to mute me.
So, basically, the long and short of it is Ford will fill the void that Red Bull were looking for, a kind of big name partner. Who are going to probably pay them quite a lot of money to badge the engines as Ford. We could do a whole episode on engines that have been badged as other things over the years, but maybe we'll save that for another time. And speaking of Ford, I'm going to press the bumper again.
Nah, these bumpers are mad. So that would need bumpers on my podcast. I can't believe this.
That would have been mad if I hadn't prematurely ended that particular bumper, but let's just pretend that didn't happen. And the reason I did that is because I wanted to bring up the picture that's currently on the screen, which is of a Ford engine Formula One car for this week's History with Alex and Brad and Nyasha. What the actual fuck is the title? Because it's a six-wheeled Formula One car. So we are in launch season at the moment. We're seeing cars wheeled out by all the different teams to varying degrees of kind of realism. And we are really struggling to see differences. You know, when I look at the Alfa Romeo, Sauber, Audi that came out today, it looks like a 2022 car, really. And it takes people like Summers or Scarbs or the other technical writers on Twitter to really point out the things that are definitely different. But back in the day, that wasn't quite the case. And the story we've got for you today is about the Tyrrell. Alex, what's it called?
Tyrrell P34, which stands for Project 34.
So we've done a little bit of research on this, and
the operative word.
I've always loved this car. So I've always, it's a car I actually had a model of when I was a kid. And you know, I've known about it for a long time, but I imagine a lot of our listeners, or certainly some of our listeners, might not have ever seen a Formula One car with quite so many wheels. They weren't the only team to ever do this, and we will talk about some of the others. But this car in particular, the P34, it was introduced in the end of 1975. It started racing in 1976. And the 1976 season was quite a famous season, Alex.
Yeah, because that was the classic Niki Lauda, James Hunt season that was immortalised in Rush. And if you are eagle-eyed enough, you would have seen this in the Rush movie.
So I didn't notice this in the Rush movie. You told me that today, and I will now have to go and look for it.
Only reason I didn't notice it in the movie, and I'm going to have to go back and watch it now, because there was only 8 of these chassis made. 2 got destroyed. One never ran, and it's in Jody Scheckter's farm. And the rest are owned by private owners.
Bit of like insider info. It's called Laverstoke Park, Jody Scheckter's farm, and the place I used to work, Palmer Sport, used to get their pies from there. So there we go. Apparently they do very good pies.
What an amazing piece of consumer knowledge.
what were the pies saying?
I didn't eat them. They weren't vegetarian. And it's very much a meat farm.
Fair.
Yeah.
But the whole point of this car, as you can probably work out from looking at the picture here, is it was to reduce drag, basically. They shrunk the front wheels down, and tyres, obviously, in order to fit them behind the big, chunky front wing, which was a size that had been mandated for that season. And obviously, by tucking those tyres out of the way behind the front wing, you're effectively having no drag from the front tyres. But you're still getting the same kind of contact patch by having double the number of front tyres. And it looked bonkers, but it actually worked, didn't it, Alex?
It did, because it gave you that... It did, because what happened is when you've got more tyres on the front, you've got more grip. And that was the whole thing they were trying to aim for, was to give more surface contact on the track and to give the drivers better turn in, better feel, so they can carry more speed through the corners.
Because they did actually try this concept with four wheels and just two little front tyres, the same size that they ended up with, but it was just too understeery. There wasn't enough front grip. So they came up with this idea of doubling that, even though it made it a bit more complicated, and they managed to engineer it.
And the good thing is, because the wheels are so small and the front wing on that car is so big, it actually completely negated any of the drag off of the four front wheels. So it was actually much slipperier in a straight line. The problems it had, though, was, first of all, so Goodyear, who was making the tyres for Formula 1 at the time, made those 10-inch tyres on that car. They didn't develop them through the season. So they said, here's a bunch of tyres. They made them for when they needed them, but they did no development work on them when the rest of the tyres on the rest of the cars all had development on them. And we know how important tyres are on race cars. They're the only thing connecting you to the track. And if something doesn't develop throughout an F1 season, it gets left behind. But the other thing was as well, because they're smaller wheels, there's more revolutions. Because there's more revolutions, there's more tyre wear. You have smaller brakes, so they wear out more quickly. So the one thing that I was watching an interview with Jody Scheckter before, and he said the thing he remembers the most about that car is it broke down a lot.
So I think the fact that they actually managed to pull that off and it was a drivable thing in the first place is quite impressive. And people expected the steering to be really heavy just because you've got more, you're having basically double the number of steering mechanisms bolted to the front. But they actually came up with a clever solution where they actually really only had one steering mechanism connected to the very front wheels, and the second set of wheels were connected by something I'm going to pretend to know what it is.
I've heard that phrase twice today and I couldn't figure out what it was.
I don't know what that is, but I'm sure most people listening, or some people listening to this, do. Anyway, one of the drivers said the steering is so gentle and absolutely free of reaction that you might have thought it was power assisted. So yeah, that's pretty good praise from a driver.
One of my favourite things about this, I again found out during my research, was I watched a video of Jackie Stewart driving this car. Now, Jackie Stewart stopped driving in 1973, so he'd been out of a Formula One car. And I saw him driving this car, and when I clicked on this video, I assumed it was like years afterwards getting in. But no, he drove this car on a racetrack a week after it was launched. It hadn't raced yet. Yet they put a driver who's been out of the sport on a press day with cameras all around it out to go and just have a go in this brand new F1 car. That's like letting, I don't know, Damon Hill go out and... Okay, maybe not Damon Hill. That's like letting...
Alex, didn't you beat Damon Hill once?
I did. In a JPLM round your old track at Palmer's. I may have got a little bit of an off track, but we didn't count that, so it's fine.
But anyway, this car wasn't terrible. It wasn't revolutionarily brilliantly competitive either. It scored multiple podiums and won a race at
14
the 9
podiums,
which is a lot. That's a decent number of podiums considering some unreliability. But it won the 1976 Swedish Grand Prix, so it did actually manage a win, and it was actually a 1-2 at that race. So even better than just a win.
Jody Scheckter, I always have massive respect for Jody Scheckter. I thought he was a fantastic racing driver.
His pies are brilliant, apparently.
But Patrick Depailler, who was his teammate, I don't know a great deal about, if I'm brutally honest. But so for someone who doesn't have much history within the sport, at least for someone who's been watching it for 30 years, to not know who they are and for them to get it to the front. It has to be a pretty good car, right?
So what went wrong? Why did this car... Why don't we all have six wheels on all the cars now? Because in 1977, they revised it. You know, they developed the car, trying to make it better. But it actually seemed to make it worse by the sounds of it. I've got here on my notes, it was 86 kilos over the... don't laugh, new people, because cars are a lot heavier now. Over the 575 kilo limit. Remember when cars didn't weigh 2 tons?
That's almost what I weigh.
So it was a little bit too heavy. Yeah, it was 3/4 of an Alex Van Gien over the weight limit. And that made it a bit less competitive. And then they basically canned it. The three axles, six wheels, was ultimately banned as a concept, wasn't it? But I believe, from what I've read, Tyrrell weren't going to pursue this anyway. It kind of run its course and had too many problems to justify the extra complication.
Yeah, three other teams tried it. March tried it with the 204. Or the 240.
We don't care, but the wheels were at the back on that one, weren't
they? Ferrari also had a very brief dalliance trying with it. But the ones who were most disappointed that it got canned and got banned was Williams, because Patrick Head had been working very, very hard on it to use a four-wheel drive system on it, to have the two have four driven rear wheels. And he'd pursued with this because he had had it told to him from Frank Williams that he'd been in a conversation with all the team bosses and that they were going to green light, keep it green lit and push forward with it. And then they cancelled it. So Williams have a six-wheel drive car with the old white and green Saudi livery on it. They have it. It was almost ready to race as far
Wait,
as I understand.
Wait, so was this a four-wheel drive, but it was the four rear wheels?
Four-wheel drive, four rear wheels, four
but six,
driven
but six
rear
total
wheels,
wheels
six
yeah.
wheels, so two front wheels. I think because it was working on more traction on the rear, so better down the straights.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was a similar, all these six-wheel concepts that came out, and have a Google of them. Just Google six-wheeled F1 cars, because there's more than just the Tyrrell, which we've shown. In fact, I tweeted a couple today. Ferrari released some images of an eight-wheeled Formula One car at one point, but that was proven just to be kind of a bit of attention seeking from them. But they did run with six wheels at one point. All of these concepts were to try and reduce the drag. They're making the tyres smaller and hiding them behind other tyres or behind other bodywork. And they're just really good on the long, fast tracks. But yeah, ultimately, Ken Tyrrell, who was the boss of the team, said, we have closed the book on our six-wheeled project. I'm sure the cars will become something of a collector's piece. And ultimately, they have been. They were actually very successful in historic racing.
I mean, linking this back to, obviously, the new car launches we've got at the moment where, if I'm honest, I'm pretty certain if you showed me a 2022 car and whatever we see as a 2023 car with no livery on it, I wouldn't be able to tell much of a difference because I'm just not that observant when it comes to that kind of stuff. Also, I think with a lot of the technical regulations that have changed for F1 this year, it's all under the floor. So we can't see it. Anyway, but now that we have the budget cap, surely that is an opportunity to open the regulations up again. To say, right, okay, you have your whatever the budget is these days, or whatever Red Bull's budget is, or everybody else's. That's your budget. Do what you want. And open the rule book a little bit more, and you've got your money to go and decide what you want to spend it on. Is that insanity, or I believe that's something that's feasible and will make the sport more exciting because you will have cars that are different.
I think there's obviously very clear arguments in either direction there. The fact that we want the cars to be as close as possible and we don't want teams to go bust and other teams to have a 10-second advantage and stuff. I love the innovation. I love when we pull the covers off a car and it's got zero pods or whatever this year's innovation is that looks different. But at the same time, by the time we get to the first race, I don't care about that as much as the cars being close enough that we actually have good racing. I think I'd rather they looked a bit more boring and samey each time, but they actually were competitive and we didn't just have one team buggering off into the distance.
This is part of the reason we call you Robo Brad.
To be fair though, I agree. Like I think for me, I'm more so like you guys are talking about the Ford Mustang earlier. I was typing up like the Ford Mustang. I had no clue what you were talking about. And then I saw it and I was like, oh, okay, now I understand. I'm not It's great. I'm a racing person. I'm not even a car person. Like, I've learned more from cars about, like, more about cars from Tommy, one of our co-hosts, than I've learned, like, on my own.
So he has some really fancy cars, doesn't he? Does he drive a Lambo?
He's got a couple cars, yeah. I've learned a lot from him. With Formula One, the reason I got into it was, like, I just love racing. Like, that idea of competitiveness and racing, and it was just like, that's my kind of, like, that's where I get a pleasure from. So I understand what you're saying, Manji, and I think we would see some incredibly different technical ways of attacking the problem, you know, even more than we do now. But not that they're super close right now, but we could lose even more convergence, I guess, especially by allowing the rules to stay moderately the same, and then allowing the cars to get, we would assume, closer and closer as, you know, as the regulation stay still. But it would be cool to see some mad innovation. Also, just a quick one, I would love to see Ferrari change 8 tires when they can't do 4. So.
Excellent. Alex, clip that for TikTok. That's a good one. So talking of car launches, we've got a couple more on the way. In fact, 3 more in the near future. AlphaTauri's car, or last year's car. Let's be honest, it won't be. Unless they really diverge from their parent company, it's going to be the same thing. Last year's car painted with a new livery. That's Saturday. Aston Martin and McLaren are both out on Monday. What are we expecting to see from them? I think Aston might show a real one.
Aston Martin apparently said that they're going to show their car. They did the same. They did it last year as well. You know, they actually showed their 2022 car last year. But to be fair, I think the one we're most looking forward to, and not because we're Mercedes/Hamilton fans, is to see what Mercedes are going to do with regards to the side pods. Because that's the only big change that any team is going to make. Will any team go zero pod? I don't think so.
I think it'll have minus pods. It's going to go in. It's going to have where the engine should be. It's going to actually tuck in even more just to spite everyone.
You're not helping the fact that we aren't a technical podcast with that comment, are you, Brad? But yeah, it's that case of, are we going to see the zero pod, and are we going to see the black livery? Which I think we are. They have been very unsubtle in all their social media posts, and they had that post that was the other day, which was this little black sliver of car with this beautiful blue on it. And I wasn't a big fan of the Petronas green, so if it goes to that black and blue, I will be in absolute heaven, because that is an amazing color combination.
I thought that was the chassis plate inside the monocoque, and I thought it was the Petronas greeny blue, but
it was much more of a blue than a green.
Okay,
I feel like I'm gonna go back and look now.
To be fair. Go for it, Nasha.
If that car is not black, let me tell you, the way that they've teased it and the way parasocial relationships are on social media, if they have spent weeks teasing Mercedes fans about it being a black car, and then that car comes out silver, there's going to be a lot of people with trust issues going forward.
If people don't have trust issues with Formula One anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care, but it would be a bit mean, wouldn't it, to all the people that they've teased. And it's quite easy nowadays to go black on your car colour scheme because it's what you want to do for weight saving anyway. Just make it all... I'd love if the Merc was just bare carbon with the sponsors on in like white sticker. That would be quite cool. And, you know, maybe they will do that. That would definitely show you a serious... about being super competitive. So maybe we're going to see a real Aston Martin. McLaren did a real one last year as well, didn't they? I think. Well, I'm going to just say it. Yeah, just believe it, it me. Was, it's probably
it,
right.
It was a big launch of sorts. They had, you know, Natalie and Lando and Daniel taking Natalie, and I can't remember who else was on the launch round, and it looked like it was in a castle of some sort, but... I feel like it might have been a show car with the livery.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I've always enjoyed launch season. And this year I've got a little bit more free time to actually pay attention to it. So I'll be very much interacting on Twitter and discussing what we see. Nyasha, how can people follow you on social media and your podcast?
Wowzers, you can follow us on at QuickStopF1 on absolutely everything. Come and chat with us on Twitter. Pretty active there. We're about to get really active on Insta and TikTok as well, which we've kind of ignored. But yeah, man, we're around. Oh, yeah, on YouTube as well. QuickStopF1. Everywhere, QuickStopF1, for sure.
And you should really check out some of the QuickStop short videos. Alex, I mean, feel free to mute yourself if you're going to breathe heavily. We do quite, it's quite sexy, but I mean, just to...
it's only done for you. I'm replying to the chat, so you forget.
Yeah, mute. I'm just being distracted by that kind of close to the microphone sensual breathing. Yes, look at some of Nasha's amazing videos. I don't know how you get them out so quickly, and so they're so punchy and they're really to the point and they always make me laugh. And yeah, so check that out. Listen to Quickstop F1, search for that on your podcatcher of choice if you want to have some enjoyable, very light-hearted and sometimes informative, but mainly just like fun F1 content. And in fact, I say sometimes informative. I've learned a lot of stuff that I wouldn't have known had I not listened to your podcast, certainly about perspective of certain groups of fans. And I'll leave it there, but go and listen. I love that. I love learning that kind of stuff.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's true. Go and follow Alex Van Gien at Alex Van Gien on Twitter, obviously on TikTok, in fact, everywhere at Alex Van Gien.
Someone's knocking at my door. I'm so sorry.
If you want to hear more heavy breathing, go and follow Alex on all of his social channels. And obviously follow me at Bradley Philpott on Twitter. You're already, if you're watching me, hopefully subscribed to this YouTube channel. If you're on Twitter, go to the YouTube channel, subscribe, or just download us on your podcatcher of choice. Thanks to Newmade, who's given us another super chat. He says, great
kind,
show
mate.
Again, Brad and Alex. Bring Nyasha back. Hashtag is a podcast. So thank you, Newmade. And Nyasha is back. We brought him back straight away just because of that super chat. And until next time, in fact, I'm gonna steal an outro from Quickstop. And this won't make any sense to anyone who doesn't listen to Quickstop. But it's a thing, Nyasha, that we don't have a proper outro. We haven't found one that we like yet. I just say a lame see you next week every time. So this time I'm going to say, until we see you next time, keep it on the full chat stuff. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.